Audio Journal is a radio reading service intended for a print-impaired audience. The opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. Thank you for listening to Audio Journal.
This is Anna, and along with Nick and Chris, we would like to welcome you to Audio Journal Sports Page. This is a program by, for, and about sports, activities, adventure, and information involving people with a variety of disabilities. Okay, I'm going to start off my segment here with this article. From 510 pounds to half marathon hopes, Shrewsbury man turns life around through running. This year, Matthew Kastner was in the running to become Mr. Health and Fitness. In 2020, that couldn't have been further from the truth. In just over a half decade, the Shrewsbury resident's physical fitness had gone from life-threatening problem to life-saving priority. Through a series of lifestyle changes, Kastner is a new man, and now he's showing others that change is not only possible, but extremely fulfilling. I just want other people to know that it is always possible. You can always make that change, he said. No matter the challenges, just keep going. Keep going. Keep going. Keep going. Keep going. Sometimes I think I was put here on earth to show you can go through so much battling and still come up on top. Kastner was once totally different. At the 500-pound mark, he started to get dizzy. He always felt angry, and hunger was an every-minute occurrence. At his worst, he could eat 3 large pizzas without being fulfilled, and his waistline kept getting bigger and bigger. He went to the doctor with a blood sugar level measuring 1,300 milligrams per deciliter, he said. You should be in the hospital right now, he was told. From that moment, he made a change. He started a plant-based vegan diet, meticulously eating only nutritious foods, and started walking around his neighborhood. Eventually, the walking turned into running, then running competitively. It just kept going, he said. After 3 weeks, Kastner lost 12 pounds. Being vegan has been very empowering. People may say, here comes a vegan, but I feel so much better with what I eat now. I could sit and have a whole plate of vegetables while everybody else is eating buffalo wings. No problem. I've got the buffalo cauliflower wings, he said. Living healthy proved to be addicting for Kastner, who now goes by the nickname Matt the Running Realtor. He joined the Central Mass Striders and heads to Sneakorama for a run every Thursday. He's set to run his first half marathon in May, and one of his long-term goals is completing the Boston Marathon. In a full field of lifelong bodybuilders with chiseled abs, it was Kastner who placed in the top 5 in his age group for Mr. Health and Fitness competition. I do have a six-pack, he said, but it's somewhere in there. For his first Falmouth road race in 2022, Kastner caught the flu one day before the event, too nauseous to eat or drink, and with a headache and so bad it felt like somebody was chiseling his head. Kastner completed his 7-mile course. After a 2-hour post-race stay in the medical tent, where he consumed no less than 12 Gatorades, he joked, that the gravity of his accomplishment finally set in. It was one of those moments where I got emotional for a minute, he said. Kastner, who has Tourette's syndrome, the result of his father's exposure to Agent Orange in Vietnam, is around 300 pounds today. Before, he wore a 6XL t-shirt. Now he fits quite comfortably in an XL. His advice to others looking to accomplish the same thing, don't give up and don't be afraid to try something new, he said. He added, we've all got challenges and we all have struggles, but stay positive. There are so many obstacles, but there's also so much opportunity. Work hard, look at what is in front of you, and go and make that change. It doesn't matter what anyone has to say. You can overcome it. I love it. Don't give up and don't be afraid to try something new. We love to hear that kind of thing. Okay, I found another article in the Community Advocate in the sports section, and it is titled Teamwork and Having Fun. Unified Basketball is back in Shrewsbury, and positivity abounds. Athletes simply couldn't be ignored in the hallways of Shrewsbury's Oak Middle School on March 12th. The school was set to take on Melican Middle School out of Northborough later that afternoon. There was no shortage of pre-game high fives throughout the school day. It's game day, baby. After four quarters of competitive action and an early influx of three-pointers from Shrewsbury squad, Oak's unified basketball team took down Melican 66-46 to open the season strong. Being able to provide these opportunities for our students is fantastic, Oak head coach Jason Ponticelli told the Community Advocate. It's what it's all about. You saw the excitement. It's not just the three-pointers. It's the smiles. It's the high fives. One of the best things is how we help each other out. Unified basketball, an activity aligned with Special Olympics, allows students with different abilities to compete on the same team, with the mission of including anyone who wants to play. During the game, athletes with and without disabilities took the court, supported by one another, and racked up points. For many of the athletes, it could be the first time they've been included in competitive sports. With the support of coaches and teammates, athletes who might have been kept on the sidelines can hit a three-pointer, make a layup, corral a rebound, or make the game-winning basket. And while the game gets competitive, there's nothing but positivity. It's great. It's great to watch them enjoy it, get into the game, and have that sort of vibe going, said Ron Kurtz, the coordinator of the Melican team. They're really being successful. It's challenging. It's hard, but these kids are able to manage it. At Oak Middle School, the crowd for Unified season opener was bigger than the average crowd for the school's other teams. There were, of course, parents of the athletes, but also a large number of Oak students who chose to support their classmates, even those they don't see often in the classroom. That makes Ponticelli especially proud. Those little acts of acceptance and inclusion make all the difference. We're champions of inclusion here in Shrewsbury, he said. It's obviously a core value, but it's something we believe in, something we love, and something we practice. It's not just from the adults. It's from the students. He added, this is part of our culture here, and it's been a long time coming. You see it in the school, you see it in the cafeteria, and obviously on the court. The support is fantastic. Even Ryan Dixon, the mayor of Shrewsbury, who put the town's unified program on the map, is getting involved at Oak. He coaches the team alongside Ponticelli. This is a very great program. Teamwork and having fun, said Dixon. I'll tell you, Ryan Dixon, he is a beast. What a great athlete he is. Basketball, he's done so many things for our community. It's great to see him still, well, have at it. Okay, my next article is titled, Boston Bruins Player Gets an Education, about a sport for the blind at Perkins School. Boston Bruins center Alex Steves has played in some tough environments. Montreal, Toronto, Madison Square Garden. But on Monday, he entered the Perkins School for the Blind gym to try his hand at a new sport, which requires him to play blindfolded. The NHL player visited the campus in Watertown to play goalball, a game designed for the blind and visually impaired. Because participants have a range of visual disabilities, every player wears a blackout goggle, so their vision is completely blocked. Three players start on their hands and knees at either end of the court, and they alternate rolling the ball down the length of the basketball court toward the opposition's goal. The large rubber balls have a bell inside so players can hear where it's going. Steves has played in the NHL for 5 seasons, 4 in Toronto, and this year with the Bruins. Through 38 games, he has scored 9 goals and added 7 assists in the 2025-26 season. This is my first full year in the NHL, so it's been cool for me to find a home in Boston, he said. Before the game, Steve said he wasn't sure what to expect, but was optimistic. I'm hoping I'm going to be a natural. I consider myself a natural athlete, but I'm sure the kids here can school me a little bit and make me look silly, Steve said. But I'm really excited to give it my all and really learn about what they play, and I'm just so excited to be here. I think it's important, athletes like myself, to meet these kids who look up to us, and I can also learn about them and trying to help me discover something really interesting. Perkins student Declan Cassidy gave some keys to playing goalball. With our teammates, we just need to use our voices, but also use any other cues, so when we get the ball, we need to call out, "Got it," Cassidy said. If we can't find the ball, we need to call out, "Loose," so everybody else knows to start looking for it. Keeping everybody in the loop, keeping everybody on that same equal playing field. We might not have sight, but we have our other forms of communication. Steve's played 4 games, each several minutes long, with members of the Perkins Tower Hawks goalball team. Each player was introduced for the crowd watching from the track circling the gymnasium. We have Julie at right wing. At center, we have Alex Steves from the Bruins. At left wing, we have Sarah, the public address system announcer, said. During the action, Steves blocked a few shots and rolled a couple of goals. He and his teammates also let in a few of their own. About a dozen Tower Hawks subbed in during the afternoon, but Steves stayed on the court the whole time. Cassidy said getting on the court with a professional athlete was a treat. "It was really special," Cassidy said. "Goalball is a favorite sport of mine. It's a great team sport. Lots of camaraderie, communication on the court. I love it. We've gone through a lot of practices preparing for this day. It's been a great time." Steve enjoyed his time playing alongside the Tower Hawks. "It's always fun getting out in the community and doing stuff. But this was a real pleasant surprise," Steve said. "I wasn't totally familiar with the sport, but being able to have this opportunity to play 4 games, I was surprised they didn't yank me out and send me to the bench a couple of times. But I was able to stay in there for all 4 games, learn the rules, and get comfortable. I ran into some sharpshooters the last couple games, but I guess I got a lot to work on." Cassidy had good reviews for Steve's first time playing goalball. "He did pretty good," Cassidy said. "Yeah, for a first-timer, you know, someone who doesn't play with balls on a daily basis." Steve said he got the hang of orienting himself without being able to see. "I felt like I was pretty good at feeling for the tape and the net and stuff like that. But a couple of times when I saved the ball and then I didn't have it right away and the ball was loose," Steve said. "I'm always relying on my vision and stuff like that, so maybe my hearing isn't as good. and just trying to find the ball was really difficult for me. To be honest, all my saves were just lucky. It was just them hitting me. Sometimes I thought the ball was on one side and it came from the other. He admired the Perkins students' skills. They're tremendous athletes. I was saying earlier to someone, every sport is different, Steve said. You use different parts of your body and your mind. Some sports are more brute force. Others are touch and using your brain. So it was just a real pleasant surprise today, getting to learn about this great sport and these great student athletes. So I'm just happy that I got to do this. What a great story. Those kids just must have adored this. Great story. All right, my next story is titled, More Than a Race. Adaptive athletes unite ahead of Boston Marathon to champion autism inclusion. Ahead of the 130th Boston Marathon, many athletes were up bright and early to prepare for the Adaptive Athlete Brunch and Training Session in Boston, which is all for a good cause. The 20-mile training was through the Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism. 300 to 350 runners competed along the Boston Marathon route. Among them was runner Zachary Stambaugh, who explained how special this opportunity was. There are thousands of kids with autism who don't do this normally, said Stambaugh. Many of these runners flew in from across the country for this training run, an empowering opportunity for many, according to Ethan Michaud with the Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism. I think it's two things. I think it's the community that we were able to bring together with all the adaptive runners that we work with to get them all here to run together about a month out from the marathon, explained Michaud. I think it's also the opportunity to run on the Boston Marathon course. They're going to get 20 miles in on the course, and they're going to run on in a month time. So I think it's invaluable for them to be able to get out there and get on the course and kind of get the hills and the rest of the course under their belt before they do it for real on race day. Since the early 2000s, the Flutie Jr. Foundation has been involved with the Boston Marathon. But the origin of this foundation dates to 1988, after the former NFL quarterback Doug Flutie created the Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation in honor of their son, who was diagnosed with autism at the age of 3. Since then, the foundation has donated more than $30 million to schools that provide clinical therapies, recreational programs, social skills training, and job support for students with autism. Stambaugh told Boston 25 that it's not about winning the marathon. It's about inclusivity. There are tons of thousands of autistic kids out there around the world who would love to see their dreams come true. And I have to thank Doug Flutie because he got me here, explained Stambaugh. This year, the foundation is hoping to raise $500,000, and I hope they reach their goal. Okay, my next article is Boston Marathon Runner, inspired by Ant's blindness, raises money for the visually impaired. Watching her face each day with courage, determination, and resilience has been a profound source of inspiration. The name of this person is Paige Stopperich, age 29, from Somerville, Massachusetts. I am running the 2026 Boston Marathon in honor of my Aunt Shannon. I will be running for the Massachusetts Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired, also known as the MABVI, as part of their team with a vision. Over the past few years, due to complex and unexplained health issues, my aunt lost all of her vision. As one can imagine, this has been an unimaginable adjustment for her and our family. My aunt and I are extremely close, and watching her face each day with courage, determination, and resilience has been a profound source of inspiration for me. So I made a decision. While I have never run a marathon before, I decided that if my aunt can handle the marathon of facing her health challenges every day with immense bravery, then the least I can do is to take on the marathon with the water stations. MABVI is an incredible organization that provides low-vision rehabilitation, in-home training, assistive technology support, mobility training, and peer groups to help people stay independent and connected. The work of MABVI does is truly life-changing, and I am proud to run the 2026 Boston Marathon in honor of my aunt and all those living with vision loss. Go, girl, go. I wish you all the luck in the world. Okay, looks like I used all my time here on Audio Journal Sports Page. So, hey, guys, go run with it.
Thank you, Anna. Hi, everyone. This is Nick, and I'll be reading you a few stories here for this week's edition of AJ Sports. The first article I'd like to read is from Inside the Games. IBSA, and this is called IBSA Strengthens Ethical Framework. International Blind Sports Federation launches new integrity system and appoints Olga Stefanis to lead the area in a further step within its institutional reform process focused on transparency, safeguarding, and athlete protection. IBSA took a further step in its institutional transformation process by advancing a system aimed at strengthening governance standards, organizing internal mechanisms, and reinforcing athlete protection within its international structure. Greek official Stefanis has been appointed as Ethics and Integrity Officer, in a decision that forms part of the broader reform process the Federation is undergoing. The official outlined the scope of her role and made clear it is not a symbolic position. Trust is the foundation of any sporting system, she said, stressing that this value underpins any organization seeking to be solid and credible. Stefanis noted that she assumes the role above all as a major responsibility and explained that in a federation bringing together athletes with visual impairment from different cultures and realities, building trust is essential. In that context, she said her task will be to develop a framework that supports it. Protecting athletes, helping prevent problems, and strengthening a culture of respect within the sporting community. The move does not stand in isolation. It forms part of broader changes within IBSA under the leadership of President Ilgar Ramov. In recent months, the Federation has shown clear signs of professionalization and a review of its operational foundations. That process included the extraordinary General Assembly held in Antalya in October, where constitutional reform emerged as a key milestone, alongside strengthened leadership structures, the professionalization of key areas, the opening of new dialogue channels with member federations, and the consolidation of sensitive areas such as anti-doping. In his end-of-year message for 2025, Ramov described the period as demanding but decisive, marked by a clear move towards institutional transformation. In that context, he acknowledged that for years the lack of modern governance systems, clear rules, and defined responsibilities had limited the development of a sustainable project for sport for blind and visually impaired athletes. Stefanis also provided a broader assessment of international sport and explained why these areas have become central across federations. "Because sport itself is changing," she said. She added, 10 or 15 years ago, many organizations considered these issues secondary. Today, that is no longer possible. From her perspective, managing competitions and regulations is no longer sufficient. Athletes, federations, and partners now expect transparency, accountability, and real mechanisms to protect sport participants. This demand requires organizations to build stronger structures to prevent abuse, respond to sensitive situations, and ensure safe and respectful environments. One of the most relevant aspects of the approach is that it avoids a fragmented structure. Stefanis explained that the Federation is developing an integrated framework designed to connect different dimensions within a single institutional architecture. At IBSA, we are building a structure that combines three key areas: ethics and compliance, safeguarding, the protection of athletes and participants, and sport integrity, she said. She added, the idea is for these elements to work together as one system rather than as separate mechanisms. The point is particularly relevant from a governance perspective. In many organizations, safeguarding tools remain dispersed across regulations, protocols, and departments with little connection. IBSA aims to avoid that model and move toward a coherent framework where prevention, protection, and integrity operate in an integrated way. When asked about the main priority, Stefanis said it is athlete protection. She reinforced this view. Athletes are the heart of IBSA. The Federation exists for them. From that perspective, she stressed that creating a safe environment, free from abuse, discrimination, or inappropriate behavior is a fundamental responsibility. Her approach goes beyond responding to issues. Integrity is not only about responding to problems. It is also about preventing them and building a culture of respect in sport, she said, outlining a model based on prevention, education, and institutional strengthening. Education plays a central role. Stefanis explained that one of the first steps will be to ensure the structure is clear, understandable, and accessible for those within the Federation. She also highlighted the need to establish transparent procedures, clear communication channels, and defined pathways so athletes and members know where to seek support. Stefanis also emphasized the importance of education. Education will also be extremely important, she said, stressing that people must understand how the system works and why it matters. Only then, she noted, can it be truly effective. The focus on education aligns with the Federation's recent direction. In other strategic areas, IBSA has also combined regulation, operational tools, and education, as reflected in the strengthening of its anti-doping program in 2025, where both testing and education, as well as accessibility of information, were highlighted. In that context, the initiative forms part of the reform process the Federation is driving, with the aim of consolidating clearer structures, a safer environment, and a governance model centered on athlete protection and trust across the Federation. The next article I would like to read is from MSN.com. Hockey program gives blind and visually impaired athletes a new way to compete. The puck rattles loudly as it glides across the ice. For players with Cincinnati Blind Hockey, that sound is everything. The growing program gives blind and visually impaired athletes the opportunity to skate, compete, and experience the game just like any other team, with a few adaptations that make it possible. I have optic nerve hypoplasia, which is basically where one of my eyes is underdeveloped, said 16-year-old player Ty Stewart. Another player, Aristotle Hahn, described his vision this way. If I look at you, your hair looks kind of one texture. If I look at you, your hair looks kind of one texture, and I can't really see your face except for two dark spots where eyes are. Despite limited or no vision, the athletes move confidently across the ice, passing, shooting, and even body checking. The difference is in the puck. It's larger than the standard hockey puck and contains six steel ball bearings inside. As it slides, it rattles, allowing players to track it by sound instead of sight. They don't watch the puck, they listen for it, head coach and founder Rob Wachs explained through his coaching philosophy. Once you get on my ice, you're just a hockey player. There's no disability. It's just a hockey player. The program is still in its early stages, but it's growing. Support from the Cincinnati Cyclones has helped provide ice time and opportunity, expanding across access to adaptive hockey in the region. For the athletes, the impact goes far beyond the rink. Even if you're disabled, try to do something that you wouldn't expect, Hahn said. Join the team, ask coaches for accommodations, and see what you can do. Stewart said the program has given him confidence and community. Without Coach Rob or Coach Renee, I wouldn't be here skating like I do. I probably wouldn't even be skating, he said. As Olympic hockey captures attention around the world, Cincinnati Blind Hockey is proving that the sport does not belong to people with perfect vision. It belongs to anyone willing to lace up and listen. Okay, the next article I'd like to read is from BBC.com. It's entitled, Fitzpatrick Focused on Future After Challenging Games. British para skier Menna Fitzpatrick says she is already looking to the future after missing out on the medal at the Milan Cortina Winter Paralympics. The 27-year-old, who is Britain's most successful Winter Paralympian, suffered an anterior cruciate ligament injury late last year and postponed surgery to compete at her third Games. But after finishing fifth in the final event in Italy, the women's visually impaired slalom, she told BBC Sport she wants to make it to another Games. Every end of a cycle marks a new challenge, and my plan is to hopefully make it to France in 2030, she said. I first learned how to ski in France, so it's like going home. That would be a really cool one for me to aim for. Fitzpatrick and guide Katie Guest saved their best finish for last after 2 6th-place finishes in the Super G and Giant Slalom and 9th in the Alpine combined. Austrian Veronika Engner maintained her dominance with her 4th gold of the Games, finishing 4 seconds clear of compatriot Alina Stari. Despite not coming away with another medal for her collection, Fitzpatrick was keen to focus on the positives. I think it's been a really successful Games for us, considering where I was before, so I'm really happy, especially with the performance today, she added. We really went out there and pushed it, and are really happy with the result. As an athlete, you always hope for your absolute best skiing in a race. It often doesn't happen like that, and as athletes, we're really hard on ourselves when things are tough. It's been a challenging 2 weeks, but just knowing that I've got these performances within me, even if the preparation didn't go quite to plan, gives me confidence. Fitzpatrick's teammate Hester Poole was left devastated after being disqualified in the first run for straddling a gate after she crashed out in Thursday's giant slalom on her Paralympic debut. Straddles happen to everyone, but it is so annoying for it to happen here, the 18-year-old told Channel 4. It's a massive shame, but it makes me more hungry. It has been the worst-case scenario for me at my first Paralympics, but it has given me more inner fire. The next story I'd like to read is from Chosun.com. Daum co-organizes 12th Harmony Marathon, inclusion with visually impaired. Portal Daum is co-organizing and sponsoring the 12th Harmony Marathon. As the event Harmony suggests, this marathon emphasizes the meaning of inclusion and companionship with the visually impaired. The actual competition is also conducted in a way that embodies inclusion and companionship. A team consists of a visually impaired and a non-visually impaired runner. The act of running together itself is inclusion and companionship. AXZ Core, which operates Daum, serves as the online hub for this event. It opens a dedicated page and handles participant registration, event promotion, and other roles. Searching Harmony Marathon on Daum's search bar or clicking related banners will direct users to the dedicated page. The official name of the Harmony Marathon is the 12th Harmony Marathon Competition with the Visually Impaired. The event will be held at 8 a.m. on June 13th at the Peace Plaza of Sangam World Cup Park. Courses include 5-kilometer, 10-kilometer, and a half course, with registrations accepted via the Harmony Marathon website. Proceeds from the event will be used for welfare and sports activities of the Korea Association of Sports for the Blind and Seoul Visual Impairment Association. Additionally, various participatory events and commemorative gifts for participants have been prepared. The company also plans to promote a natural culture of daily donations through donation activities for the visually impaired. Yang Ju Il, AXZ representative, said, "We join this event with the hope that the message of the Harmony Marathon, breaking down barriers between the disabled and non-disabled, and connecting people through companionship and inclusion, will reach more users. We will do our best to ensure that the values of mutual growth and social meaning are widely shared and that a deep sense of empathy is formed through Daum," he added. And that'll be it for me here on this week's edition of AJ Sports. Thanks everyone for listening, and I'll hand it off to Chris to finish off the episode. Take it away, Chris.
Hey there, listeners. It's Chris's time here, coming to you with a few more stories to round out our time together. First, we're going to talk baseball, how baseball coach Don Landolfi came to help visually impaired athletes. Luck, perhaps? Fate, maybe. More like divine intervention, at least for Don Landolfi. I was watching baseball practice back in 06 or 07 while I was in Italy, coaching the top Italian team. The Hall of Fame former baseball coach at Brooklyn College told the Brooklyn Eagle last week. "I realized," he continued, "the gentleman instructing that team was a former player of mine, Valerio Ranieri. He was coach of a visually impaired team." And so the seed was planted for Don Landolfi, a man who has been involved with baseball for close to 60 years as a player and a coach, both nationally and internationally. "Just watching these youngsters play and perform," he said, "I learned so much from it. Blind people can do so many things. They can play baseball, of course with limitations, but they can play." The bug hit Landolfi while in Italy about 11 years ago, he says. I was helping the Italian visually impaired ball club, he remembers. And before I knew it, one of the organizers, Lorenzo, asked me if I could start a program like this in America. Fast forward to Central Park, circa 2015. Some people did come from Italy to help, said Landolfi, who grew up at Avenue U and West 7th Street, right above the Sea Beach subway line. We had our first clinic, he said, and attracted some people. With the help of the Lions Club, Landolfi was able to fund the program, purchase equipment, and become competitive. How competitive? The blind baseball tournament was staged in the Netherlands 2 years ago. Italy won it. The Holland trip in the WBSC Blind International Cup was sponsored by Lions Inc., according to Landolfi. It was the first time the World Baseball Conference sanctioned this tournament, he said. Coach Landolfi's unit placed third with bronze medal. Now, the 83-year-old coach is taking his co-ed crew to England for the second international tournament. We may not be as strong as we were 2 years ago, said Landolfi, speaking like a true coach. One of our players can't go. He does not have a citizenship, and another never applied for it. Landolfi's squad plays on Friday against a team from Hungary in the first round. Pakistan and Great Britain are also in the same bracket. Cuba, Holland, Italy, Japan, and China are on the opposite bracket, according to the coach. The top two teams meet in the semifinals, the coach says. And as far as ages are concerned, you must be at least 15, he said. Each team has a roster of 8 with 2 alternates. Each game is 5 to 7 innings long, or an hour and a half, explained Landolfi, who played his high school baseball at St. Michael's, located at 4th Avenue and 43rd Street. The school was replaced in 1957 by Xavierian High School. Teams are made up of 5 blind players, 1-sided player, and 1-sided defensive assistant, said the coach. The ball, he said, has chimes. The sighted defensive player and the sighted assistant also serve as base coaches at second and third base when the team comes to bat. The batter puts the ball in by playing it and tossing it up in the air, Landolfi said, and hitting it. In order for the batted ball to be ruled fair or in play, it must go beyond the strain that starts at the first left corner of the defensive second baseman and extends to the third base foul line behind the base. Challenging? Perhaps. More like fate, just like Landolfi was introduced to the game of baseball. It was an accident, my getting involved with baseball, he said. While attending St. Michael's Diocesan High School, a friend asked me if I'd try out for the team. I said, what team? He made that St. Michael's team as a freshman and never looked back. He played for 3 years and captained as a senior. As far as coaching, Landolfi was quick to say, I've learned a lot from it, even at practice. I will tell each of my players their strengths, shortcomings, and they always respond. Just think, Landolfi's introduction to coaching the visually impaired started in Italy with a cup of espresso at a meeting. That espresso is the only pay I've received since starting in 2015, he said. For the visual impairment, it was a blessing. Perhaps it was fate. All right, next we're going to take a step back and bring up the Paralympics again. This time, all eyes were on the Paralympics this summer. But where is the progress? 3 pro athletes speak on the astronomical cost of their adaptive equipment and how insurance and healthcare have not caught up to their needs. Catherine Dubrunner had tears of joy in her eyes as she sped across the finish line in the women's marathon at the 2024 Summer Paralympics in Paris, taking home the gold. And she crossed that finish line 5 more times, taking first place in the 5,000, 1,500, 840 meters, and second place in the 100 meters. The winning streak felt like the culmination of a long road for the Swiss athlete, who got into para-athletics at the age of 8, when she attended a kids' sports camp and her coach gave her first racing chair. From that moment on, I was in love. I knew this was my sport, she recalls. In connecting with Dubrunner just after the Paralympic Games, where athletes from different countries competed in sports such as paratriathlon, wheelchair basketball, blind football, wheelchair rugby, sitting volleyball, wheelchair tennis, and para swimming. With all the exposure sports have gotten this year, the Paralympics had their biggest year yet, becoming the most streamed games of all time and reaching a record 15.4 million viewers. But this also brought to light a huge disparity, namely that not nearly enough progress has been made in the fields necessary to make disabled people's lives better. Unlike Olympic athletes, many of whom are sponsored by clothing brands like Nike, Adidas, New Balance, Paralympians, particularly wheelchair athletes, often end up being sponsored by car, tire, or technology brands, such as P&G, Samsung, Toyota, Honda, and Bridgestone are some of the biggest names. As those companies can provide the athletes with the equipment they need to move, compete, and live. Health insurance is rarely any help in this area, and the healthcare sector just doesn't prioritize athletes' needs. In Switzerland, the financial support we get from our sports center to buy a racing chair depends on our level of the sport. She's sponsored by Honda for her wheels, but still has to pay her part for her competition and everyday chairs. And I could tell you that it's not really cheap, she says, noting that even normal wheelchairs are crazy expensive. And in the United States, despite the country's massive presence in the Paralympics this year, the cost of adaptive equipment and prosthetics remains colossal. U.S. Paralympic champions Chuck Aoki, wheelchair rugby, and Aaron Pike, wheelchair racing, get their sport chairs through their sponsors and their rubber racing gloves custom made by tire brand Bridgestone. But they pay fully out of pocket for their daily chairs, simply because it's just too much of a hassle to get insurance to support them. When I originally got this chair, the FDA hadn't even approved it yet because of some insane rules, so insurance refused to get it, so I just bought it myself, because then I could have it a month, Pike says, of his everyday chair. I didn't want to have to deal with that whole entire process, but not everyone can do that. We should be getting a new day chair like every 2 years, and it shouldn't be some giant process. Aoki, who brought home silver medal this year, explains that chairs are not one size fits all. Every person has to be fitted into a custom chair every couple of years. As for the many different sports wheelchairs, he notes that while the technology has evolved greatly, few companies around the world make them, and the demand is not high enough to push more companies to get involved. All of which means the small amount of product that is available is extremely expensive and hard to come by. Aoki hopes that in the near future, 3D printing technology will make it possible to produce both sports and everyday chairs in less expensive and more seamless ways. Or, he says, there needs to be like a Mint Mobile for wheelchairs. No shade to Mint Mobile. Companies need to make something much, much cheaper, particularly for young kids who grow out of them and everything so fast. He adds, the reality is that, you know, if you're able-bodied, you buy a pair of shoes that you grow out of in a few months. And it's not that much money. So then you buy another pair. Whereas I was 6 when I started playing sports, and you'd have to get a chair that was $2,000 or $3,000. And for most families, even if you're doing fine, that's a lot. Pike also notes that chairs are not even the worst of it. His fiance, fellow Paralympian Oksana Masters, is a double amputee and therefore uses 2 mechanical legs. And it's insane to me. The costs are astronomical, he says. For both full sets of legs, knees, sockets, feet, all that, you're talking $200,000. The knees alone cost $60,000, and they're only refurbished and serviced for every 2 to 3 years. And then they expect you to buy new ones, which is crazy for something that costs more than a car. Advocacy group, So Everybody Can Move, is working to change that for the disabled population by challenging the country's discriminatory healthcare system and fighting for insurance coverage for recreational prosthetic and orthotic care. Nicole Verculin, the campaign lead for the organization, says disabled children are much less likely to get into sports or physical activity simply because they don't have the tools to do it. And, as we've seen, Even professional Paralympic athletes have trouble getting the equipment they need to do what able-bodied athletes can do only with their bodies. Growing up, I was not able to get access to anything for running, for physical activity. Insurance companies deemed anything, even prosthetics, orthotics, or physical activity, not medically necessary. And so they didn't cover them, says Van Keulen, who uses a prosthetic foot. A runner herself, the advocate explains that for 4 years, she ran on walking feet, which is not only incredibly uncomfortable, but also risky, as the foot can easily break. It wasn't until a brand sent her a running blade that she finally able to train the way that she was always meant to. One of the biggest recent technologies in Paralympic sports space is actually a rubber cover for racing blades. Since the blades have spikes, athletes previously had to change legs just to get off the field and walk on the solid ground. A lot of the time, people say it's a luxury to have access to these equipment. But no, it's not, Van Keulen says. I mean, this is life or death in many cases for people to have access to what they need to be physically healthy and also to be able to have the same opportunities in life and in their careers as able-bodied people. As we wrap up this talk, Deb Runner tells me she's gearing up to race in the Berlin Marathon, the Chicago Marathon, and then a marathon in Japan. She's also celebrating the release of her new campaign with New Balance as the first woman in a wheelchair to be featured in a global clothing campaign of the sort. This milestone is exciting, but it's also shocking that it's taken this long to get here. Progress for disabled people and athletes does need to come from the country's healthcare sectors, Deb Runner says, but it also needs to come from the larger population itself. As a whole, we need to change our perspective. Sometimes people feel pity for us because of our handicap, and unfortunately, there are still people who think our level is not high enough as athletes, which is definitely not true. Our level is much more than ever, and everybody's fighting very hard for that podium. She says, I'm a full-time athlete who trains as hard as Olympic athletes. I won these medals with a lot of effort, and I find it sad that I still need to justify myself. All right, now let's bring this to a wrap. With Healing Through Sports, organization uses adaptive sports challenge to help disabled veterans. For many veterans, transitioning back to civilian life can be a challenge. And for those with physical injuries or PTSD, it can be even more difficult. But one veteran found through help through physical training. Now Andres Rosario wants to show others they can do the same. He's the founder of Team Blue 4, a nonprofit created to promote adaptive sports. It's a military acronym for Blue Forces. Blue Forces are the U.S. military and our allies, Rosario explained. Rosario stopped short of calling himself a trainer, mentor, or guide. I'm just someone who wants to help others, he said. An ordinary guy helping them out of their comfort zone, get them off the couch, off social media, and challenge them through some type of sports. The Team Blue 4 program works off the concept of 21 and 90-day challenges. It takes 21 days to create a habit, 90 days to create a lifestyle, Rosario said. It's all based on their fitness level. Each challenge is individualized. This month, Team Blue 4 celebrated their first anniversary with a 3K obstacle course race. Athletes and supporters gathered before sunrise at Goodwin Park in St. Cloud. I'm a firm believer that getting outside, any form of getting the body moving, is the best medicine out there. There's no replacement for physical activity. Volunteers were in place to help some of the athletes navigate the more difficult obstacles. I already had a few veterans say, I have shoulder injuries. I have different disabilities that I can't complete this obstacle. I said, no, we'll complete it together. And if you're going into that foxhole, so am I. We'll do it together. There's nobody here sitting down, looking at their phones, Rosario said. There's no phones out here. It's amazing. They're here challenging themselves. The Team Blue 4 mission statement in the website, to change the life of our local disabled veterans' holistic health through adaptive sports, we challenge our athletes to get off the couch and into an adaptive sport challenge. We strongly believe in the benefits of an active lifestyle to improve both physical health and mental health, such as the invisible wounds like PTSD. Our mission is to challenge disabled veterans through adaptive sports challenges. We seek to help them in their healing journey, to improve their physical and mental health, and in doing so, facilitate them in crushing limitations. The comfort zone is poisonous. That's where depression, anxiety, PTSD, and all these mental illnesses hang out, Rosario said. So you have to get out of the comfort zone to get over it and challenge yourself. Rosario served for 27 years in the Army National Guard. He uses his own experience to help others. After retirement, I found myself with a lot of illnesses and a lot of injuries due to my service. I tried different treatments, different stuff, and I found a tremendous amount of healing through challenging myself. Diego Labonte was nearing the end of the 3K obstacle course. The Army veteran was breathing heavy in the middle of a set of burpees. Labonte had a stroke 5 years ago. He suffers from nerve damage and has had a hard time with recovery. I was sitting at home, not doing much, and then went through adaptive sports at the VA where I met Andre and Team Blue 4, Labonte said. I've been getting out here more and more often now, trying to be more physically active again. Labonte is limited in some movements, but completed his 21-day challenge. His goal was to complete a Spartan race. He did that in April. Now, he's in the middle of his 90-day challenge, a half marathon. As added motivation, Rosario offers each person who completes their challenge a 30-minute instructional or introductory flight and a paramotor glider. Rosario thought his military career would one day lead to becoming a paratrooper or a helicopter pilot. None of these things happened, Rosario said. But that's okay. No regrets. I just had a different calling in the service. But he did discover the paramotoring hobby after retirement, taking additional training to offer instructional flights to the other veterans. This is my calling. This is why I'm here. This is my purpose, Rosario said. It's to help somebody achieve or crush their limitations. Limitations they thought they couldn't because of disabilities. You've been listening to Audio Journal Sports Page, our effort to look at sports from a different point of view. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone or iPad. This is Chris, along with Anna and Nick. If you have any information on any disabled sports and would like us to share it with our listeners, give us a call at 508-797-1117 or email info@audiojournal.org. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to Everyday Poems for Every Day, sponsored by Audio Journal. Our poem today is The End by A.A. Milne. When I was one, I had just begun. When I was two, I was nearly new. When I was three, I was hardly me. When I was four, I was not much more. When I was five, I was just alive. But now I am six. I'm as clever as clever. So I think I'll be six now, forever and ever. You've been listening to Everyday Poems for Every Day, sponsored by Audio Journal and read by me, Nikki Wichelow. Thanks for listening. May your life be filled with poetic wonder.